steak, tired of eating this pad thai.
Thank you so much for being here, brother. Welcome back to another episode of Almost Canceled. I'm one of your hosts, Mike, along with
Stafford. How are you? This is Almost Canceled, and this is
Cinqua Walls.
Cinqua Walls, ladies
and a very established actor who is in his bag from Louisiana.
Yeah. Well, our family's originally from Louisiana. Okay. I actually grew up in the Crenshaw District in Los Angeles.
Okay, so you're from here?
Yeah.
Okay, right on. That's what's up. You're known for many roles. You got some mad range. Thanks, very man. Impressed with your work. Yeah, thank you so much for taking your time out of your busy schedule to be here with us. Let's just jump into it. I mean, tell me about what inspired you to want to be an actor in the first place.
It's so cool to have that question from an actor, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we get those questions all the time when it's like not actors, and you're just kind of like, well, what answer do I give you when you don't really have a craft of understanding?
Yeah.
I remember watching an episode, or with the scissors that you sent me, of when you were talking about like sex scenes.
Yes, yes.
And I was like, I can't wait to have a conversation with another actor, because then you can talk about it from like the
an understanding.
Tangible understanding of it all. I think for me, it started just with a love. Like I fell in love with acting when I was 11 years old. Some people may or may not know, I grew up playing basketball, played a multitude of sports, went to college on a basketball scholarship, did all of that, but arts and the performing arts was always just a love for me.
Sure.
It wasn't something that I even understood was a job.
Right.
It was more like, this is something I just enjoy to do, I'm just passionate about it. And then later on in life, when I discovered, like, oh, you can get paid to do this?
Wow.
And I've always been very mindful of, you know, that quote where it says, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Exactly.
So for me, that was like the process. It was like, okay, I kind of want to do something that I know I wake up every day and I just feel a joy. I think even now, like, choosing projects and looking at, like, I saw this thing, I read this thing in Michael Caine's book where he said, if he opens a script and it says exterior blizzard day, he says it's a pass.
he's not going to
like, so I always think about like The Revenant, and I'm like, ooh, he would have passed on that.
Absolutely.
And even now, like, I do look at the script and I go, where does it shoot? And there's certain cities where I'll be like, what's the story?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm grateful to be able to do that. But it started with just a genuine, authentic love, bro. It wasn't even an idea of being in LA to be famous. It wasn't an idea of like, oh, I'm going to become like anything popular. It genuinely was like, oh, I love this, and everything that I saw, like the characters I fell in love with, just were living life.
Mm.
You know, my mom and I lived in an apartment building, and we didn't we didn't have cable.
Sure.
So we had this thing called cable, where the guy over at Ralph's would come and like splice your cable from like one of your neighbors, and then he'd be like, what channel do you want?
Oh my God.
And he was like, you pick the channel. So my mom picked some of the movie channels and like the Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
So all I grew up watching was like movies and Cartoon Network. I didn't watch Fresh Prince until I was in high school.
Wow.
I didn't watch, because I didn't have TV channels. Right. I just had movie channels. So I just grew up loving movies and loving acting and just loving like the craft of it and trying to just get more into it. So I went to school, studied drama, and then just let the path begin from there, bro.
Wow. And you went to study in San Francisco.
Yes, right.
Hence the San Francisco patches on the jacket, if you can't
also
see.
Also, my
represent.
Family. Also, you know, half and half. Like, shout out to both sides of my family, mother and father. Like, some family is from, both family is derivative of the South, but some family lived in L.A., some family lived in the Bay. So I would spend summers in the Bay Area.
Mm.
So shout out to my brother who still lives in the Bay Area.
Hell yeah.
So, Cinqua, talking about some of your previous.
That's a great segue.
Accomplishments. Soul Train?
Yes. Soul Train, American Soul.
Teen Wolf?
Yes, yes.
The Breaks?
Yes.
Can I tell you my favorite movie that you've done? Which I think probably put a little bit of pressure on you because it's a classic.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
White Man Can't Jump.
That's right.
You and Jack Harlow.
That's right.
Woody Harrelson, Wesley Snipes.
Yep.
Cinqua Walls, Jack Harlow.
Yep.
Tell me about that experience.
Probably, I would say, tied for one of the most fun experiences I've ever had filming a project ever.
Wow.
You know, we shot in so many different beautiful locations in LA, not just extravagant ones, but deeper in the inner city.
Yeah.
We went from Watts to Compton to Crenshaw to Inglewood. You know, then we obviously also went to like Beverly Hills and a lot of really like affluent neighborhoods, but there was just a flow of different cities and spaces that we shot in. I thought that was really cool to just bring the city alive. Bring culture into it, and then the opportunity. I grew up loving White Man Can't Jump.
Yeah, same.
You know, I literally was just talking about that intro scene in the original when the guys were singing,
mm-hmm.
and Woody's walking up to the beach, and like just how fly that was.
Yeah, yeah.
And then playing in Venice Beach and growing up, going to Venice Beach to like play guys on the court.
That's crazy.
It was just a love. For me, it was just like,
oh, you literally did that? So you actually went to Venice Beach and did
things? Yeah, when I was a kid. Yeah, because you always wanted to, especially growing up playing basketball, you wanted to hoop wherever you could find competition.
Yep. Art imitates life.
Art imitates life, man. Exactly. And so playing against older guys was really important when I was really younger because those are the guys that are going to test you.
Yeah.
You know, I even think about when they said when Kobe first got drafted to the Lakers back in like 96, 97, he would go to Venice Beach and play because he wanted to just get that toughness, that competition. Wow. That's how I think that's actually how he broke his hand. Like, he originally broke his hand before he started playing.
I didn't know that. Because,
like, somebody knocked him down, but he was still playing basketball.
Did not know that.
And so just that movie was a beautiful experience, man. Working with Jack, that's my dude now.
Yeah,
you know, I believe
like,
it.
I
believe
it. Jack is just one of the, like,
funny
the
guy.
Funniest.
He seems like a mad chill guy.
He's a mad chill, but goofy. He's so intelligent.
Yeah. I believe
and that's
that.
Why I think he creates, like, if you think, like, he always has a moment in each season where he just, like, hits something.
Right.
And I think about this one interview that I saw. Like, the epitome of Jack to me, the definition of Jack to me, is there was this interview where he was talking about his journey becoming a rapper with Charlamagne and Envy on The Breakfast Club.
Mm-hmm.
And he had said something, just being Jack, and then Charlamagne said, pause, and he just said, resumed. And it kept going back.
I saw that.
And
that
I was
good.
Like, that is so smart. Like, it was just so high level. And I was like, dang.
I don't like this pause shit.
It's you don't like pause? Like,
you know,
hey, yo, pause.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends say it, but let's just keep it rolling.
Yeah, just keep it rolling.
Know? It's just like, it's like people, guys, usually when people like say something sus and then, but I don't know.
I think it's like,
2024, keep it rolling.
It's funny, I think.
It's funny. I think it's funny when you say it, because like we'll say it off of like the wrong moment. Because I think when people get so caught up in like this hyper-masculinity identity like, oh, I have to move like this. If I say this one thing, it makes me less masculine. It's not true.
No.
Yeah.
So like release yourself of that like, that oppression, I would say. And so that at the end of the day, when like we say it, it'll be like the most random, like, hey, bro, like, can you move that table over here? Pause. Like, it's just random.
Oh,
like,
okay.
So I was introduced to pause a couple years ago by like Devin Booker and D'Angelo Russell because, you know, I sometimes say some jokes that might be a little sus and I would get paused all the time. And if I had the if I had the Jack Harlow resume,
I
think I would have done.
Isn't that so, but that's Jack.
Genius.
Like Jack, and like I've always really believe this. I think people, even though he's hit a wave and he's super successful now, I think this is just the beginning for him because he's so talented and he's so smart and he's so thoughtful with people. And when we ended up just becoming genuinely becoming brothers. Throughout the journey, I saw him later that night when we ran into each other.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and it's the same love all the time.
Where'd you guys run into each other?
The Moët Chandon.
Moët Chandon.
Champagne after party at the Golden Globes.
Golden Globes. Yeah.
Golden Globes, tough life, boys. Tough life, huh?
Champagne problems all
fun. So let me ask you this.
Champagne problems,
One of my good friends on this
movie
was your love interest and girlfriend, living girlfriend, wife. What did Tiana Taylor play in this movie? Please talk about that.
T's played my
T-T.
Wife.
He said T-T.
T-T. T-T.
Oh, yeah.
T-T squared. Oh, yeah. Shout out, congrats to T-T because she's doing a new movie with Leonardo DiCaprio right now.
Oh. I heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She's just going for
it. I just saw that today.
She's
got it, man. She's the funny thing is I've known T not as long, like almost as long as we, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've been friends longer, but I met T because she did The Breaks.
I didn't know she did The Breaks.
Yeah, she did. She did three or two episodes of The Breaks, and we had a couple scenes where me and Wood Harris, who played my boss, we played A&R music executives, and we were trying to sign Tiana Taylor's character, and Dave East. Out to Dave East as well.
Legend.
New York legend. And so we were trying to sign them, and so that was like we had a couple scenes together. And then now, fast forward, we were playing husband and wife, trying to make it work, trying to you know, dig our way out of the structure of what we were in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I love it, man. It was fun working with T, and I always say I would love to work with T so many more times because not just as an actress, she's so giving, but she's just a dope person.
Yeah.
She's like, so
her heart
powerful.
Is the same. She has such a presence, and she's only like 5'4".
Crazy.
But you would think she's like 6'9", the way she moves in the room.
7'1".
Like 7'1", easy. She'll dunk on you, and she'll say that.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. but no, it was, excuse me. It was
that's
amazing.
Some right thank there. You. Need some, sir. No problem. That's for you.
Let me, I want to ask a kind of an acting question as far as you know, getting to work on White Man Can't Jump with Jack Harlow,
mm-hmm.
who is traditionally not an actor, mm-hmm. to the best of my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like, you know, for the two of you, you and T, kind of coming in
yeah.
as traditionally trained actors,
yes.
working with somebody who is in the music industry, yes. who maybe doesn't understand, but I'm sure, yeah. just given what you've spoken about Jack,
yeah.
he probably did his research. He probably had a coach. He probably was in the fucking cut, yeah. pardon my language,
yeah.
and just was doing the best that he could to learn,
Absolutely.
To be able to keep up with you, if not try to
Absolutely.
Cover you.
And see, yeah. that was the best part. Before we got in deeper into rehearsals, because we started rehearsals, then we had basketball rehearsals, then we had, you know, script rehearsals, work with the director and everything mm-hmm. like that. And I was sitting in my office, just kind of going through my notes and script before day one, just kind of get a good little lay of the land of what we're going to go over in the material tomorrow. And my phone rings, and at the time, I don't even think, I guess we'd already exchanged numbers, but the phone rang, and it said Jack Harlow, but it was like 10 o'clock at night, right? And I'm like looking.
A little
like,
booty call.
No, and I'm kidding, like, I'm
kidding, buddy, buddy.
Yo, and I'm literally going, why is Jack Harlow calling me? So I pick up, I was like, what's good, bro? He's like, what's up, man? And I was just wondering if you wanted to like run the lines before we got to work tomorrow. And I was like, we'll Very be cool. good. I was like, we're good. Because you know, I mm-hmm. mean, there's been amount of times where I've been, again, so fortunate on this career to work as consistently as I've begun to work, where I've never had someone call me.
Right.
And I mean, like, talented people I haven't had call me that are trained traditional yeah. actors to say, let's just walk through it. Not even, we're not trying to perform it.
Just read through it.
I just want to hear your voice.
Hear the words out loud.
I just want to make sure, like, we can kind of flow.
Yeah.
And so the fact that we are, like, in this thing together, for him to just want to do that, I was like, okay, solid. And that was us all the time. We were mm-hmm. always just kind of, like, working it, riffing it. Jack is super inquisitive, and what I liked, there was no ego, right? He wasn't one of those people that came in going, like, I need to be like this. Right. He would ask me, like, what do you think about that? Or like little things that you don't realize we are accustomed to knowing when someone says, you know, we're on the Abbey.
Yeah.
And then Jack would be like, what's an Abbey?
Who's Abbey?
Who's Abbey?
What does that mean?
That's the second to last shot.
No, great.
Right?
The second to last shot.
What's the martini, Stafford? What's the martini?
That is a drink.
I like
dirty martinis.
Yeah. Yeah,
extra dirty.
Chick Hearn, it's like the game's over. Martini's the last shot.
How was Jack on the basketball court? I mean, being a college basketball player,
yeah,
he looks wet. He looks like he's wet.
Jack is an athletic dude, and really? Jack is an athletic dude. I'm not gonna lie, I did not know it.
Because you can't see it.
The hair throws
me off a little.
Jack is taller. You've met Jack.
Have I?
Have you?
I don't think so.
Jack is taller than you realize. Like Jack is about 6'2".
Wow.
Okay.
Jack's taller than people realize, and so we were doing a scene. Outside courts in Leimert Park, and we had to do this rehearsal scene where I throw this behind the back pass from the top of the key. Jack catches it, has to two step and go up for a dunk.
He hurts his knee.
So we're doing it, and then our director, the shout out to Chuck Kalmatic, he was like, "All right, man, we're gonna lower the rim to about like 9.5 feet, so that you know you can get the dunk easy." And Jack was like, "What? No,
it's just not,
man." Like, he was like, "What? No." And so I'm looking at it going, they about to have this man do this about 13 times. He should lower the rim, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But he's like, no, I don't want it to be any question that it's me dunking. And I was like, respect.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yo.
I really fuck with
that man too. Caught the ball every time, two-hand dunked it himself. Like, I'm talking like, went up, bang, went up, bang.
At 6'2"?
Went up, bang. I'm two-step, dunked it.
Damn.
But he's athletic. He played soccer growing up as a kid, so he has a lot of natural athleticism.
He got some bounce to him there.
Yeah, and it was another scene. We're at Dorsey High where he goes up in sandals and has to one-hand dunk it. And I was like, okay.
Quad's like, man, all right then.
I was like, let's go. Yeah, yeah. And he's competitive. This. It's like he's solid, man. Like I think that if you have Jack on the court – he's one of those players, like he's a utility guy. You're gonna always utilize him in spaces. Mm-hmm. He'll always help you win. I think he probably plays like midfield in soccer or something like that. But he's an athlete, bro.
Copy you.
More athletic than I ever would have thought.
Wow. I love that. Speaking of Jack, and not to air him out or anything like that, is he as much of a Riz God as he seems to be in interviews and just carpets?
Jack is smart.
He knows how to play the room.
Man, I see him in interviews. He's like, hey, I love you. She's like, yeah, I love you too.
Jack is smart. and Jack is a Pisces. And
me too.
Yeah, so he's very in tune to people's emotional energy. And I think that's like the special part about him is like he knows how to flow in a room in a wave. Right? There's times where like Jack could come in a room and if the room is low, he's gonna come in vibrant to liven up the room.
Mm. And if it's high,
Jack will just be like,
interesting.
I love that.
And then someone asked him a question, just for like his own entertainment, which I think is so funny. Someone asked us a question, we're doing an interview, and the guy was like, well, do you think whatever, whatever. And Jack goes, Good question. Doesn't say anything else. And I was like,
all right.
But it was the funniest thing. And I was like, to have that kind of timing.
Yeah.
And it would flow. But then sometimes someone would ask a question, he'd have a full answer. They just said, good question.
Next question.
That was it.
Interesting.
That was it. He's very smart. He knows how to flow with the energy, man.
You know, you have worked with other musicians on screen, such as 50 Cent.
Yes.
T.I.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Wow, yeah.
How was that? I mean, 50 Cent. Let's talk about 50 Cent for a second.
Yeah.
What a legend. Shout out to 50. 21 Questions, one of my favorite songs.
Facts, facts.
What was that like being on Power, where we met?
Yes, yeah.
We've been friends for about 10 years.
He was on Power?
No, I was holding, I was a grip.
You're a henchman?
I was, yes.
He was holding.
I was killed off very quick.
Damn.
But, you know.
He's trying to disrespect the grips. I was a grip.
I was a coordinator.
I was a coordinator.
Production coordinator.
Yeah, exactly. I was a guest.
Right.
Me and Stafford actually became friends because a really good friend of ours, J.R. Ramirez, was on Power with me, and he was like, "Yo, my boy's coming with us to the first cast party."
Right.
And so you know how it is. I mean, I don't know. He knows me so well that sometimes like he'll make fun of me because I'll just leave. Like it'll just be the most random.
Very good Irish.
I'll just dip, and he'll be like, "Where you at?" I'm like, "Bro, I'm at home.
I'm in bed.
Bro, I'm gone. Yeah, I was there for 30 minutes. I'm out."
Yeah.
And so I'm walking outside, and they happen to walk outside. Jay happens to walk outside, and Staff's there with him. I didn't realize everybody was there. Mm-hmm. So me and Staff start talking about life, New York, whatever, my first time in New York. And he was like, "Bro, if you ever want to go out, whatever, like, you know, just link up with me. Like pull up. Like, real chill." And we became boys because I was like, "Yeah, that's cool, bro, going out and all that stuff. But, you know, you play 2K? You play NBA 2K? He was
sure
like,
do.
"What?" Yeah, I was like, "All right, dog, I'll pull up to play 2K.
Oh, my God.
So we would just play NBA 2K, like, before we went out. After we went out, we go down and play pool, and that's how we really became, like,
I love you.
Lifelong brothers.
Video games bring people together, man.
Yeah,
tell you what.
But it was the fact that, like, the guy that works in nightlife never wanted to go out, and the guy that didn't want to go out was going out with the guy in nightlife.
Exactly.
You know what? Brothers, bro.
Yeah.
And what's up with JR? Have you spoken to that guy?
I talked to him. Yeah, he's doing really well.
A lot of golf, I see.
A lot of golf, living rich. You know, hey, the richer you get, the more time
that
you
manifest
have to
money. That manifest
to manifest
money.
Your freedom. You know? That's what I'm saying.
What we used to say is we use our power to manifest our future.
Yeah.
Right? That's what that's my dog.
I love it.
That's what we used to say.
My dog. But no, 50 was great. Working with 50, probably one of the smartest people I've ever met in this industry. He understands much like Jack, to be honest with you. I think there's something when you have to be the independent alchemist to your journey, and I think sometimes music artists, they have to be everything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You are the talent, you are the brand, you are the producer, you are the creator, you're orchestrating it all, so they have a different cognition on how they want to create. And 50 is like that too. That's why I said, like with Jack, I just see him doing so much and becoming super successful. He has so many other brands and entities that he's developing right now. I'm just proud of the kid, so I can talk about him forever.
Yeah.
But 50 was the same way, man. I mean, 50 was one of the smartest people, one of the first people to really just mentor me and just take me under his wing to meetings and places I had no business. I would be sitting at Power meetings in Beverly Hills next to 50 Cent. No one cared who I was.
Yeah.
They were like, "Who's this?" He's gassing me like, "This is Cinquan. He's playing my son." Blah, 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 blah. And I'm meeting like a billionaire from wherever who's about to invest in another thing 50's doing. And I'm sitting here like, "Yeah, man.
Nice to meet you.
Cool."
God bless.
It's cool. And he would call and check on me and be like, "Hey, man, and like, how are you like working on the craft?" So my experience with 50 has always been someone who just really has poured into me positively and given me really great perspective and advice of how to become successful in this business. I know he always told me how proud of me he was, the fact that, like, he's like, "You always just know when to leave."
That's
and I'm
true.
Telling you, like, I didn't That's know true. That that was a thing, but I always just had this, like, energy flow of, like, okay, if I can't give anything else to this space, I might as well just leave.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he would laugh because it'd be times he'd be like, "Oh, you want to pull up and go wherever?" I'm like, "Nah, see, I'm going to stay home and read." And he would laugh. He'd be like, "No one ever believed that you're on the phone with 50 Cent saying, 'I'm not going out
I'm gonna go because home I want to stay home.'"
That's
you know,
true.
I'll do that.
That's very, very
I'll
true.
I'll be like, I'll stay home and read. T.I., same way, broke down a lot of knowledge. I found with that generation of guys, those two in particular, they had no problem giving game. And I had no problem asking.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I always try to
props
be
props to you for that, for asking, because asking is one of the hardest things.
True.
Because of the intimidation factor.
True.
Would you ever go onto a set with this level of intimidation from somebody that you knew you're going to work across or work for, work with?
You know, no, because I think questions are earnest. Like, because I'm not, because as you know, like, I'm not asking for anything.
Right.
like, as long as I'm not asking for anything but wisdom, hey, can you, anything you have for me, share your knowledge with me.
Yeah. Your experience.
And, yeah, but your as mistakes. Long as I'm not asking to take something from you,
yeah.
I feel like everyone, we're so used to being in the industry, specifically when we live in LA, the reason why someone wants to know you is to see what they can get to get over you to go to the next thing.
Transactional.
Very transactional. So the fact that I was just like, hey, if you had one note for me, can you give, and then they'll, I find that the most successful people have no problem sharing.
That's amazing.
You know, the most intimidated person I was intimidated to work with first, and I masked it so well, was probably Angela Bassett.
I mean, she's so classic, iconic, beautiful.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I remember watching Angela Bassett when I was a kid, and I was like, that is the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my life.
Truly. You're mesmerized. And I, you know who's like, the, to me, the dopest human and the just the most OG on the planet is her husband, Courtney Vance, because he lets her live. Mm. Like they both are their own independent person who've come together to create this even better relationship. And you see Angela in the room, like she moves, and the room moves.
Yeah.
The room moves when Angela Bassett comes in. I've seen people get up to be like, Angela Bassett. And I'm talking like, it'll be like Bradley Cooper, Angela Bassett.
Damn.
Like the room moves when Angela Bassett comes in. Again, she's only like 5'5". Yeah. And it's like the room moves.
5'5 of beautiful.
5'5 and just woman. Powerful. Powerful. And like the art comes from here and it emanates out. Mm-hmm. And Courtney will be there and he'll just be like, it's my wife.
It's my baby.
That's a good question.
I got a 50 Cent question for you. I respect him for always speaking his mind.
Yes.
No matter how crazy it may be. What are your thoughts on the way that he was very outspoken about this Diddy incident? And
I mean, it doesn't surprise me, man. It doesn't surprise me because
he's the only one that can do it, by the way.
He's the only one that can do it. And I want to always highlight something that's an even greater gift and savvy of 50.
Okay.
And I'm saying it like this because I want people to really catch this when they watch it.
Yeah.
There's this book that I've been reading that I love very much so. And it's called, I'm reading two books right now. One is called The Creative Way by Rick Rubin, which I love. If anyone hasn't read it, read it. It's awesome. and I'm reading another book called The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. Right?
Okay.
And the idea of one of the laws is you don't have to be first, you just have to be memorable.
That's very true.
And so if you notice, and I thought about this when I was reading the law, and I was like, dang, I go back to Power. When we started Power, we didn't have the same marketing budget that Empire had, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's the first thing 50 did? He said, we're better than Empire.
Yeah. He caused a feud, I remember that.
He caused a feud. Mm-hmm. But go back to when he started his career. He would start a feud with someone, say, I'm better. Mm-hmm. And then he already had a stockpile of content to pour out. So while you're even questioning, is he better or not better? Do I not? You're falling in love with the antithesis of what you like.
So good.
Marketing genius.
Marketing genius. So like I said, even right now, I'm not surprised. My mind goes to what's the greater play here?
Oh, there's always something
because
else.
50 is going to tap into your marketing for free. Mm-hmm. You're going to challenge it, and then you have to go to see, is 50 telling the truth? And then you go, this is actually pretty good.
He's got this liquor coming out, right? Maybe he wanted to, Ciroc.
I know that 50 always has a bigger play.
And, I love that.
And that is my thing where I'm like, in knowing what I've observed and knowing what I learned, because there's nothing, he said something really key in the interview, and I watched it, and I love it. And the reason why I watch it is because I was on IG and I saw this thing that said Aries personality, right? And it had this interview with 50 Cent. And Angela Yee was asking 50 and the Breakfast Club asked 50, like, you seem like you always want to have an issue with someone. You always like had a problem. He was like, I don't want no problems. He said, I don't want no problems. He said, I'm a peaceful guy. I don't want no problems.
I love
But then support. Someone comes to me and says, I got a problem. And I say, no problem.
Yep. That is one of my, by the way, that is one of my favorite 50 Cent quotes ever. I do not want a problem, but if you got a problem. No problem.
No problem.
I'm here for it.
And I'm like, that is him.
So because
he doesn't take it, he's seen life at a greater scale. He's experienced almost losing his life at a greater scale.
Yeah.
So some of this stuff isn't really
unfazed, bro.
Unfazed. He's like, this is entertainment.
Yeah.
And
I really think he believes that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mad respect.
He's a smart. He's a maverick.
Amen.
Yeah.
Maverick. I'm going to switch gears real quick and talk about basketball. Because you yourself, like you said, play basketball at a decently high level. And what do you, okay, who do you think the GOAT is?
Ooh, love this question. Love this question. So, and this is how I really, truly think about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's only three that we can consider.
Okay.
Truly. LeBron, Kobe, and Jordan. Truly. We can only consider
Durant them. Is out.
Durant, to me, Durant is one of the best scorers of all time.
Sure.
He's an elevated version of one of the greatest scorers of all time in George Gervin, the Iceman. And he's one of the he's a killer. Mm-hmm. If I needed someone to give me a bucket, Durant, easy. Am I going to go in and build a team around Durant right now? No, I need one more piece.
Yeah. Fair.
Right? And so that's my perspective. But if I'm looking at the three that we put on the Rushmore of comparison, 1A, 1B, 1C, if I had one person where they said, hey, right now, bet your life, one-on-one for your life. If that person loses.
One-on-one for your life.
One-on-one for your life.
That's a good way to put it.
Life. If that person loses, you're going to die. I'm putting my money on Kobe. He's going to keep me alive.
Wow.
He's going to keep me alive. If there's one person they said right when he first came in the league, who would you build a team around instantly? I would say LeBron because he knows how to facilitate. He's really Magic Johnson on a higher level. Oh, he's wow. an elevated very, Magic very with true. A better jump shot, 45-inch vertical, all those kind of things. Damn. That's it.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to say who I'm going to put as the GOAT only because of legacy and trailblazing, it's Jordan because what he did to transcend the game, mm-hmm. what he did to cross-market the game, what he did to brand the game, those are the things that he was the first person to lay a blueprint. So I give him honor because of legacy, but you put them all in their own category because of era.
And let's not forget that Kobe openly talks about how he used to study Michael Jordan's moves to get to the highest level
you
in his career.
You see it. He patterned it.
I respect the way that you broke that down.
That was good.
Because some people would be like, oh, the GOAT is this person, this person, this person. They talk about points, championships, et cetera. But the way you broke that down to say, for my life, for one-on-one, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Because I know who's like, Jordan's a killer too. You know, but I know Kobe, but I know
Beam was mentality. Different. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that if it was Kobe and Michael one-on-one, who's taking that?
If it's Kobe and Michael one-on-one, I'm still going to go with Kobe.
Wow.
What about LeBron, Jordan?
Jordan, for sure.
I
don't think what LeBron does is accurately defined by making him a one-on-one player. Right,
like it's a big body though.
Well, that's why if you look at Magic, when Magic came in the league at 6'9" as a point guard, because there were very few big point guards. But if you look at LeBron's game from the time LeBron has won everywhere he went, I go all the way back to when he was at St. Vincent St. Mary's. Before he was at St. Vincent St. Mary's, they didn't make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. When he was at St. Vincent St. Mary's, they became the number one team in the country. They beat every top team in the country. He put 52 on Oak Hill when they had 19 Division I players.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
He leaves St. Vincent St. Mary. They don't even make their conference playoffs.
Damn.
Right? Goes to the Cavs. Was it second year or third year? Goes straight to the finals. Right?
Yep.
He's one of those guys, you can put him anywhere. You can take a team, and he will get you to the championship. Right? You always need pieces to win beyond, but he will get you there.
I mean, look at the ticket prices for the Lakers.
Crazy,
team.
Right? It's crazy. Stupid.
Kobe's going to be like, I will give anybody 50, and I really believe Kobe will give you 50. But he really will be like
for sure,
50,
for sure.
And he's locked in. What is the thing that Gilbert Arenas said when Jordan was with the Wizards? Jordan was with the Wizards, and I guess he like hit a shot on Kobe or did something, and so he told Kobe. He said, "You can wear the shoes," because he was wearing some Jordans. He said, "You can wear the shoes, but you'll never be able to fit them." And so they so as this story has been retold by multiple basketball players, even ones that were on the team with Kobe, the rest of the week until they played Jordan again, Kobe didn't talk to anybody. He went, worked out, practiced, got his shots up before, got his shots up after, didn't talk to anybody. The next time he played Jordan, I think he put 47 on him.
My God.
Because he was like, I'm waiting. And people were like, Kobe, you good? He's just, so one-on-one for my life, I'm putting it on Kobe.
All right, fair.
One-on-one for your life. Speaking about life, let's talk about mental health for a quick second. I saw something actually on Twitter, and I'm curious to get your opinion. Why do you think, in most cases, men they feel the need to go through things alone?
Yeah.
Kind of, if I'm stressed about things, worried about money, worried about my love, whatever the heck it may be, I'm not going to disclose it to most females ever.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to not even disclose it to some of my homies.
To your tribe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
You know, I think it's systemic, man. I think we are slowly but surely creating a new generation mindset of acceptance around being vulnerable and how vulnerability isn't lacking strength. Mm-hmm. And I think that the generation that we were kind of coming from and we were in, if you think about when you see young boys and young girls, if a boy falls, they say, get up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't cry.
Yeah.
be tough. Yeah.
Okay, copy. Yeah, yeah. I went through that as well. Like, yeah. Don't cry, boys, don't cry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get up, yep. Brush it off, yep. Get back
keep
in the game.
Moving.
Yeah.
Keep it moving.
Yeah, and that was a lifestyle perspective that comes from no matter what environment you grew up in. You know, I grew up in the Crenshaw District. I have friends who grew up in even greater circumstances than me. Inner city, whether you grew up in the inner city, the suburbs, a rural area. As a young man, you were always taught that same lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
boys don't cry.
I mean, and same here. And then to dive deeper into the mental health, like mm-hmm. here at Almost Canceled, our goal is to build a community
yeah.
around mental health and to make sure that men and women alike do not feel alone.
Yeah.
So would you mind sharing with us a failure or an injury, how that affected your mental health and the yeah. tactics you used to move on?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that question. And when you asked it to me, when you told me about it, I was like, what is a failure? And I'm trying to really track back because I will genuinely tell people I think that every failure creates a greater you.
Agreed. You maybe know? Good, maybe bad.
Yeah, I think they're all good. Yeah. I think they're all. I think it doesn't happen to you. It happens for you. You know, and it's not a loss. It's a lesson. And these aren't metaphors of things that I'm just spouting out. I really kind of believe that
mm-hmm.
because I've seen it manifested in my life. That once I changed the framework and the frequency of how I approached it, there was always a way out.
Right.
But I think, you know, just going through, I grew up wanting to play basketball, bro. I grew up, as much as I loved acting, and that was the compass of what I choose, you know, I, like every other kid, wanted to make it to the league.
Of course.
I wanted to be in the
of
NBA.
Of course.
Yeah. Mine was the NFL, but yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I failed. I didn't make it, right? Like, I went from being the top high school player to get into college and realizing, like, there's a level out here, and I'm not going to play as much, and the coach is, like, not invested in me, and now I'm sitting on the bench, and now people don't really care, and, like, I'm going through an internal mental implosion. Of what do I do and who am I? Identity yeah. crisis.
That's huge.
Identity crisis. You know, and I had to kind of recalibrate my identity of self, right? It wasn't even about, by the time I started my career and started getting recognized and mm-hmm. notable for things, I didn't care about recognition because I'd already redefined myself to not need recognition.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I was like, oh, I don't need this because you know, like you go from football, you go from basketball and you're playing in your town or whatever and you're a top guy and everyone's telling you you're great.
Yeah.
And you're going, okay. Yeah. Then you go to a camp and you are still great.
Yeah.
And you get to college, kind of great. And then all of a sudden, it's like, you ain't great.
Yeah.
And to see the juxtaposition of people who maybe loved you your freshman year and didn't give a crap about you your sophomore mm-hmm. year, you go through this implosion. And I had to go, okay, I can't stay here. And it was actually, I always talk about this, and I've said it to anyone. I was dating this girl who was very much more in tune with her emotions. And I was very closed from mine. Like, I wasn't,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
anywhere about to talk, about to cry. I wasn't doing anything. If you asked me how I was feeling, like, I was like, you think I'm weak?
Mm.
And I remember just simply her wanting me to talk about my feelings and my emotions. And the only reason I wanted to is because I didn't want to lose the relationship.
Yeah. So you kind of felt pressured.
I felt pressure.
Yep.
And it was the greatest pressure that I had because what it caused was a journey. A journey of me getting away from the things that would ultimately hinder me later when life happened. Right, so I feel like sometimes I'm going through losses all the time that are ultimately preparing me. I don't look at, like, it's so funny because as actors, people will say, you know, you hear no's every day. And I remember, you know, I'll say this. Like, yeah. how is it you're an actor? You hear no's every day. I'm like, really, I do?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, huh, okay. Sure. I didn't realize that.
No. It's like, even if when you hear the no's, you use them as, like, fuel.
You use them as fuel. And I also think, like, when you get it, you have no – that experience has no power on my mental to be a no.
Correct.
So it's kind of like, okay, like, I don't know what you were looking, that's, it's like, yeah.
It doesn't diminish me as an individual.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, I wasn't right for the project. You didn't like me for the project.
Great. Cool. Good luck.
Next one.
Yeah. Moving on. And so I never really thought about those as no's. I would say more so lessons in life.
Right.
Where, you know, another great loss, failure lesson. In learning how to move in a room. And that's something I would even impart on people who have aspirations to succeed, if it is in the entertainment industry, if it is in business. But like we talked about earlier about not being so transactional.
Right.
I had the blessing of having really great people who, as I was succeeding, they wanted to bring me into greater rooms.
Mm.
And I was interacting with these people. And one person in particular, a successful producer, we're still friends to this day, but he brought me in a room that I wasn't ready for. Because when I walked in the room, it was a lot of people in the room.
Yeah.
And I came in, what's up, bro, man? Oh, man, I got out of traffic, man. It was fucking crazy. And I don't realize that in the room are all these really successful, high-level people who are assessing my presence. But he brought me in the room because he thought I was ready. And I thought I was ready.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready.
Damn.
And I shot myself in the foot.
Oof.
And I've always remembered that from this day. It was the greatest lesson. That's why I said it wasn't a failure. It was a lesson. So when I move in a room, I move very intentionally. I move very observant. I move very, very quiet in many spaces.
It's good to listen.
To listen it's good to first. Listen.
Absolutely.
And you know, because he's brought me around so many people. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. He's brought me around so many people where I'm like, what's up, man? By the end of the night, we're talking. But in the beginning, I'm like, but that's because of that room where I literally took that L.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so it wasn't a failure. It was a lesson.
Yeah.
So speaking, okay, so real quick, we're just going to touch on this. I mean, obviously, we're almost canceled. Speaking of intentions and speaking of moving a certain way, with cancel culture, and it's definitely slowed down, I think, a little bit in the past year and a half. But whenever it first popped off. What are your opinions on it? Like, do you think that you move a certain way, not just in meetings, but just on social media? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're not a clown. Mm-hmm. But do you kind of reserve certain opinions or have your friends reserve certain opinions so that way you guys aren't getting yourself into a place where you've upset a certain group of people?
Yeah.
How do you maneuver that?
Yeah.
And is that fair?
So social media is an interesting space because I do think it's a helpful tool for us all to have the power of marketing ourselves, right? And if you can market yourself well where it's authentic, I think that's what the audience buys. I think in anything, what people have to understand is that you trying to create a fabricated image or a lie will never be bought.
No.
It'll never be bought because there's something innate in our sensibility. Like even if we're talking to someone we're interested in dating and it's like, something's off about
it. I can see through you.
I can see, I don't like her energy. Yeah. I don't know what it is, right? And so in the same way with social, my movement with social is really how I move in life. I did not grow up, I wasn't a kid who grew up with people taking photos, right? So my default is not to take a photo when I'm in a room. Like it's not it's not my default. Right. Like if anything, my friends, when the camcorder came out, we was using the camcorder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you notice, like my Instagram will be more videos, but that's my voice. And so to me, that's how I can tell the visual storytelling that I admire, that I like.
Yeah.
And as far as being like mindful of what I say, that's a part of that comes from, you know, growing up. I had the ability to transition in spaces because I grew up in a predominantly black environment. Then my mom sent me to an all white high school, and I had to.
What high school was that?
Beverly Hills High.
I had to get Beverly that in.
Hills
I had. By the way, guys, I had to get that in. That Cinqua walls went to Beverly Hills High School.
Yes.
Just want to get that out there.
I did.
Okay, just say it.
I grew up in Crenshaw. I went to Beverly Hills. I am the
damn. So you're like Spencer James. Holy shit, Spencer that's
James.
Amazing.
I'm Spencer James. No. Exactly. So when I first, my mom would say this thing when she, I was about 14 years old, about to turn 15, and she would drop me off in front of the school lawn at the school, and she would pull up in front, and there's these little stairs at anyone knows Beverly Hills High, there's these stairs that you walk up to go to the front door. So she pulled up, and I would always be there so early because my mom had to get to work. So it was like school opened at like 8:30, 8:15. I would be pulling up at like 7:09, and I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting to get into school.
Just twiddling your
thumbs. Waiting. I would see people start. I would see the janitor start to open the door, take the chain off, and I would get ready to walk, get out the car, and right before I would get out the car, my mom would go, "Hey," she go, "You're always on display and you're always being watched. So don't fuck up."
Facts.
"I'll get out the car."
Facts.
"Have a good day. Get out the car."
Slam the door.
So I think that process of "you're always on display, you're always being watched, so don't fuck up now to get out the car" also bleeds into like what I'm saying on social.
That's fair.
Because I'm conscientious of, is this something that later can have a detrimental effect?
That's a great answer.
And that's just my consciousness to it. It's not an intention to like be inauthentic.
Right.
Or be curated. It's just more like, I can't always control the legs of this. And that mindset of just that conversation at 14, 15 always stuck with me. I do notice at times my friends do filter themselves in ways that I'm like, "Ooh, does that feel good for you?" Because I'm very big on like, my energy has to feel good for me.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, all I can do is go home with me.
Yep,
when I lay down at the end of the day, that's it.
That's all you got.
Yep.
So I'm very much so like, can I move with this person every day? Mm-hmm. Am I proud of this person every day?
Am I
confident or appreciative of what he said today? And I watch when my friends move in these environments, I'm like, well, think about what is it for you, why you have to now recurate what you want to say. Because maybe that's internal stuff you got to work on.
Props to moms.
Yeah. And she was a killer.
She knew from the beginning. She's like, my son is not only going to be an athlete, mm-hmm. he's going to be on the big screen also. Mm-hmm. So pay attention.
Pay attention.
Now, let's stay on social media for 1 second. Please. And this is for the ladies out there. I'm sure everyone is wondering.
Yeah.
What do your DMs look like being the heartthrob in pretty much every single movie you do?
You know, I had this conversation actually last night.
All right.
You know, they have grown.
Sure. I'm sure.
They have grown. I always know that my stock is rising by how many DMs I get. I'm like, oh, what's hitting right now?
Right.
You
right.
know, like you go right. through a season. I think like it's a season, right? Like, yeah. for actors, you know, it may be like this for musicians. Like I think for athletes, you're playing such a long season, so there's constant exposure.
Right.
So you can't really gauge the flow of interaction because it's happening all the time.
Yeah.
But for actors, when the season hits again,
yep.
And then you go, okay, then it'll kind of maintain and level up. And yeah. then something else will hit, and then it goes, and you know the different audiences.
Yeah.
And so I don't even check DMs anymore, man. I'll be honest, like, man. It's not because of some, like, I'm better than the DMs.
Right.
I just have really been committed to just my own personal growth. That I feel like that's one tool that if I overcheck it, I'll never have time to grow.
Yeah. Yep.
Because it is like, the DMs are like going to Target.
Target, huh?
Break it's that like down. Going to
Target. Yeah, not Walmart.
Oh,
not,
like if you go in for one thing.
For one thing, like you can open it and then all of a sudden, just like on your Explore page, you're running down.
That's really good.
You know what I mean? So you look for one and then it's like, now you got 100 more, you can still be like,
yeah. It's right there.
And then you look up,
analogy.
And whatever you came to buy, you didn't buy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You spent more than you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Which is your time. Right?
Yeah.
Right? And none of it had any value, which is like Market Pantry gummy bears.
Market Pantry gummy bears.
Not even Haribo.
You heard it here first.
You went for Haribo. You left for Market Pantry.
We don't want Market
Pantry.
It all starts to look the same.
Do you have any relationship advice for men or women in 2024 with this crazy world of social media?
Yeah.
I mean, give the people some knowledge. It seems like you've got it figured out.
I'm figuring it out. I don't think I got it figured out.
Close.
But yeah, I'm on my way. My advice, man. Read the 5 love languages.
Mm. All right.
That's nice.
Read the 4 agreements.
Okay.
Read the Big Leap, right? Because then it'll give you a palette of understanding yourself and how to communicate with others.
Mm.
And then above all of that is just communication. Communicate truthfully, communicate with integrity, because at the end of the day, everyone's trying to find happiness, everyone's trying to find love, regardless of sexuality spectrum, regardless of gender attraction or transition. Everyone's trying to find happiness, everyone's trying to find love. But at the end of the day, if you're not communicating who you are, you're not allowing yourself to be open to the person that is right for you. So you don't want to be with someone just because you have the ability to, that isn't for you, because that frequency will eventually end in a left or a right. But if you communicate authentically, you will find someone that genuinely jams with you. Like, I think about, like, Trekkies. People like clown people like that are, like, into Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
But they found another person that loves Star Trek.
Yeah.
Be true to yourself.
Like Disney adults.
It's like, hey, like, don't be out here, like, you want to watch Dragon Ball Z and they want to watch Star Trek. That's not for you.
Amen.
Keep it moving. Wow, that's beautiful. Beautifully said. But we're out of time.
Ah.
Thank you so much for spending your Sunday with us. This has been a fantastic conversation. I've gotten to know you a lot better, and I love it. Brother, I love it. Thank you, Stafford.
Thanks, Quah. My dog.
This is another episode of Almost Canceled. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
See ya.